Hello, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Husky Energy First Quarter 2011 Conference Call and Webcast. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Rob McInnes, Manager of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us to discuss our 2011 First Quarter results. With me today are CEO Asim Ghosh, CFO Alister Cowan, COO Rob Peabody, Vice President of Midstream and Refined Products Terence Cutrick, and Vice President of Downstream Bob Baird. In today's call, we will provide an update on Husky's business strategy and an overview of results. Later this morning, we will also be holding our annual general meeting here in Calgary. A webcast of the meeting may be accessed from our website at huskyenergy.com. The AGM presentation begins at 10:30 A.M. Mountain Standard Time. Please note that today's comments contain forward-looking information. Actual results may differ materially from expected results because of various risk factors and assumptions that are described in our quarterly release and in our annual filings, which are available on SEDAR, EDGAR, and our website. I'll now turn the call over to Asim.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the first quarterly call of the new year. As you can see from the results, this has been a strong quarter for Husky compared to the same quarter a year ago. Production was up 5%, earnings were up some 70%, cash flows up 36%. So on all key metrics, a good quarter. But actually, if you do a bit of deeper analysis, it is not just a question of increased oil prices because it was a mixed bag for a number of reasons. We did have strong Brent oil prices driven by a global recovery and, of course, the political tensions in North Africa and the Middle East. However, if you look at gas prices, at this time, most people in the industry thought gas prices had bottomed out. But in fact, there's an abundance, the abundance of supply continues to exert downward pressure. Secondly, as far as our particular business and a lot of Canadian, Western Canadian industry is concerned, differentials widened between light and heavy oil as a result of lingering issues related to the Enbridge pipeline disruptions. And, of course, we had our own supply throughput restrictions at the Lloyd upgrader, which didn't allow us to get the benefit of that widening. Western Canada did not experience the full benefit, therefore, of the improved global crude pricing environment. On the other hand, the refining crack spreads widened in the U.S. due to the Brent WTI differentials and an improving economy, which drove increased demand, and our downstream assets were able to benefit from that. Net, it's very clear that our asset portfolio, our integrated strategy, allowed us to deliver a good result because of strong performance in segments of our portfolio, which more than offset challenges in other areas. And most importantly, the fact that all of our segments were able to deliver solid operational execution and so, therefore, were in a position to take advantage of these factors. Now, coming out of production, our production for the quarter averaged 310,000, a little bit over barrels per day, which is an 11% increase over the fourth quarter of 2010 and, as I said, 5% up from a year ago. So that's within our guidance. There are several factors for this strong performance. In February, we completed the acquisition of our properties from ExxonMobil. Now, while it's headlined as a gas acquisition, in reality, I remind you that it's a very oil and liquids-rich acquisition. That purchase began contributing about 22,000 barrels per day from production from that early February date. So we haven't had the benefit of a full quarter on that. On the East Coast, our North Amethyst satellite development continued to perform well, with production averaging 31,000 barrels per day in the quarter gross. So that's about 21,400 net to Husky. We also achieved a solid performance from our Western Canada heavy oil portfolio, where we've initiated, as you recollect from my conversations in previous quarters, a number of accelerated development activities outside, and these are organic, outside of the acquisitions. So overall, we are pleased with the progress we've made on the production front, and we believe we remain on track to achieve our guidance of 3 to 5% growth over the five-year plan. I do wish to remind you that this is a cumulative production growth number. There will be variations year to year as we experience turnarounds and as we bring on projects. So this is really a five-year average. A brief word on our midstream downstream performance. They both provided solid performance for the quarter. Throughput from our refineries and upgrader averaged 310,000 barrels per day during the quarter, compared to 275,000 barrels per day in the fourth quarter of 2010. And some of that base, of course, was affected by the turnaround at Lima last year. Optimum throughput levels at our downstream refineries were achieved, fortunately for us, at a time when we were able to capitalize on these record crack spreads that we've been seeing. During the quarter, the downstream segment contributed some $153 million to net earnings compared to $9 million in the year-ago period. Midstream also performed strongly, contributing some $79 million to net earnings compared to $49 million a year ago. Coming now, sort of taking our eyes off the immediate quarter issues to the larger strategic issues, which are, you know, our three growth pillars. First of all, Southeast Asia. We continue to make solid progress in advancing this cornerstone project, which is the Lewan gas project. And as you know, we made three significant natural gas discoveries in Block 29-26. There's Lewan 3-1, Liu Hua 34-2, and Liu Hua 29-1. The overall development plan for Lewan 3-1 has been prepared, undergoing final reviews, and we expect to submit the plan for approval later this year. Pricing contracts are at the late stages of being finalized. I'm not in a position to disclose the exact details because, you know, it's in the midst of a negotiation. But as we have said to you before, I can share with you that gas will be sold under a long-term contract at competitive prices in the South China, the Guangdong and Hong Kong markets. Project sanction is expected within this calendar year. First production targeted for late 2013 and then ramps up through 2014. In oil sands, we did tell you in the last quarter that we had sanctioned the project. The Sunrise project remains on budget and on track, and that is targeting for first oil in 2014. And conceptual work has already begun in the quarter on Sunrise Phase 2 with an eye towards leveraging the economies of scale that would emerge from an expansion of that project. And finally, in the Atlantic region, we continue to evaluate options for the next phase of our White Rose satellite developments. A key option in the consideration there is the possible construction of a fixed drilling platform. And again, like the South China Sea project, we hope to be able to provide further details on this as well later in the year. In summary then, I think it would be fair to say we are pleased with the progress we have made in the past 10 months to execute our strategic plan. You will recollect that, you know, we got clarity to the South China spin-off uncertainty. We got clarity to the Sunrise execution project. We did complete two significant acquisitions. We are very pleased with the initial results of those. We undertook a comprehensive financing plan. And I think our first quarter results demonstrate some of the early gains. And we continue to execute against the financial targets and operational milestones that I'd outlined to you in the Investor Day in early December. And I just would like, in ending, to reiterate the fact that our strategy of being an integrated company, which I told you, look, we were integrated for some very specific reasons, specific to our particular portfolio, I think this quarter has been a vindication of that fundamental cornerstone of our strategy. Okay, on that note, Alistair, why don't you pick up on the next section?
Thanks. As the same indicated, we did perform well this quarter, but we did have some negative impacts on the strong Canadian dollar continued weakness in natural gas prices and the wider Western Canada crude oil discounts to WTI that Asim talked about. However, these were more than offset by strong operational performance in production and refinery throughput and higher Brent-related crude oil pricing for our offshore production and refinery margins in the U.S. Net earnings were $626 million, or 70 cents per share, and that compares to $368 million, or 41 cents per share, in the same period a year earlier. Their net earnings did include a gain on disposal of non-core assets of $143 million after tax. Our cash flow from operations increased 36% during the quarter to $1.16 billion, or $1.30 per share, compared to $854 million, or $1 per share in the year-ago period. And this compares to cash flow of $1.04 billion, or $1.21 per share, in the fourth quarter of 2010. I'd remind you that the cash flow related to the gain on disposal of non-core assets is not included in the cash flow from operations. It's included in cash flow from investing activities. Our financial results clearly reflect a transition to IFRS at the start of 2011, and we did disclose in our annual report in note 24 the full impact of that, and we restated that in Q1 again. Our 2010 numbers have been restated for comparatives. The main impact of IFRS to the quarter are exploration expense as a result of our move to successful efforts accounting and higher depletion expense as a result of reporting on a field-by-field basis now instead of a full-cost basis. That breaks out to $93 million pre-tax for exploration expense, as we've disclosed, and roughly $40 million additional depletion charge pre-tax. Now, our production averaged 310,400 barrels BOE per day, and that compares to 296,000 BOE per day in the first quarter of 2010, and up from 280,500 BOE per day in the fourth quarter of 2010. As the same said, our U.S. downstream business had a very solid first quarter with strong operational performance of the refineries and higher refining margins, and that resulted in the downstream segment contributing $153 million to net earnings in this quarter. The upgrader resumed normal operations mid-April, now following the completion of repairs due to the minor fire. The overall pre-tax impact, including repair costs, is estimated as an opportunity cost of between $70 to $80 million pre-tax during the first quarter. We will have about another $10 to $50 million impact in April as we ramped up. Pricing, we did see improved pricing environment, which was a contributor to the quarter's results, although I would say that the stronger Canadian dollar did partially offset some of that improved pricing. Our realized crude oil pricing was $76.78. compared to $69.29 for the same period last year. As I said, we benefited from higher Brent-related pricing for our offshore production, which is approximately 31% of our liquids production, but that was partially offset by lower pricing for Western Canada crude oil as a result of export pipeline disruptions. The light-heavy crude oil differentials averaged $23.11 per barrel, and that compared to $9.29 per barrel in the first quarter of last year. But as Asim mentioned earlier, we weren't able to capture the full benefit of that widening spread as a result of the reduced output of the upgrader. However, I would say it did positively affect contributions from the Toledo refinery, which processes a significant amount of heavy crude oil. The realized refining margin in U.S. downstream averaged $16.83 U.S. per barrel in the quarter compared to $5.12 U.S. a year ago. Realized natural gas prices reflected weaker market conditions and were $3.66 per MCF compared to $4.81 per MCF last year. From a financing perspective, we completed two key initiatives as part of a comprehensive financing plan. These are designed to increase the liquidity and financial flexibility during a period of accelerated growth in our portfolio. The shareholders approved an amendment to the corporation's articles, which allows dividends to be paid in cash or common shares at each shareholder's discretion. And the April dividend that was paid in early April reflected that cash and stock split. We also closed a preferred share issue in the quarter, raising $300 million in equity financing at very attractive rates. And our debt to capital ratio at the end of the period was 21%, and debt to cash flow of 1.2 times on a trailing 12-month basis remains below our targeted ranges. If I look forward, we do see a reasonably good market environment going forward into the second quarter. When we look forward, I'd remind you for the rest of the year, we have some planned maintenance events. We're scheduled to complete a minor 45-day turnaround of the Lloyd upgrader in the third quarter. During that period, the upgrader will be at roughly 70% capacity. The Toledo refinery will have a minor 30-day turnaround in the second quarter on the Isar cracker unit and for general maintenance. On the East Coast, the Sea Rose FPSO is scheduled for a 16-day maintenance turnaround commencing in July. However, we are evaluating options to reduce that program's duration. We also expect that the originally scheduled 15-week dockside maintenance for the Terra Nova FPSO will be deferred from July 2011 to future date. The timing of the turnaround is undergoing finalization by the operator. Now, as I previously mentioned, the transition from Canadian generally accepted accounting principles to international financial reporting standards will have an impact on retained earnings and net earnings. There will be no impact to cash flow as a result of this. For 2011, we've estimated the transition to IFRS will result in a reduction in net earnings in the range of $200 to $275 million versus the comparable Canadian GAAP numbers. Finally, the Board of Directors has approved a quarterly dividend of 30 cents per share, and each shareholder's election will be paid in either cash or shares. Now, at this time, I'd like to turn it over to Rob, who's going to talk about the upstream results.
Thanks, Alistair. Well, as Asim and Alistair have described, the first quarter was very strong from the standpoint of operational and financial metrics. It was more challenging from a safety perspective. As you will be aware, we had a fire at the upgrader that resulted in reduced throughput. We also had an incident while fracking a well in Western Canada. I can assure you that both of these incidents are the subject of rigorous investigations. Lessons learned from the incidents will be shared throughout the organization and with our industry partners where appropriate to guard against any reoccurrence. Turning to production, as Asim noted, we made solid progress in the quarter in accelerating our near-term production. So far, based on our performance to date, we remain on track to achieve our production guidance. In Western Canada, the foundation of our business, as described in the strategy, in the first quarter, we drilled 234 exploration and development wells. Looking at the type of wells drilled, 94% of these targeted oil or liquids-rich resource gas plays, in line with our strategy. In oil resource plays, we focused on developing our opportunities in the lower Shaunavon and Bakken zones of southern Saskatchewan, along with the Viking zone in southwest Saskatchewan and central Alberta. 16 wells were drilled in the quarter and 6 placed on production at a combined rate of 445 barrels per day. We continued to develop in terms of our gas resource plays. We continued to develop our liquids-rich natural gas assets. Our prime focus in the near term is Ansel, where liquids production from the Cardium averages about 50 barrels of natural gas per million standard cubic feet of gas. At Ansel, 4 rigs were active and a total of 20 wells were drilled in the quarter. While currently shut down for breakup, we plan to recommence drilling in the second quarter with 21 wells planned. In the third quarter, we expect to commission extra capacity at Ansel to take production to around 56 million cubic feet per day and over 2,000 barrels per day of liquids. Additional exploration and development drilling continued at our plays in northeast British Columbia, and with two Jean-Marie development wells drilled at Bivouac and the first Musqua horizontal well drilled in the Horn River Basin with very encouraging results. Through a combination of crown land sales and private purchases, we increased our land holdings in our gas resource play portfolio by 29,000 acres in the quarter. Looking at our activities in Lloydminster in heavy oil, construction of the 8,000 barrel per day South Pikes Peak project is about 60% complete. The project remains on budget and on schedule, and we expect first production in mid-2012. Construction also continued on the 3,000 barrel per day Paradise Hill project, which was commenced at the start of the quarter. First production there is expected in late 2012. Our horizontal well development program, targeting new geological horizons in the Lloydminster area, has been running at a strong pace. 31 of the planned 104 wells for 2011 were drilled in the first quarter. And we continued to make good progress at the Tucker Oil Sands project, with production averaging 6,200 barrels per day in the quarter. And that compares to with 4,000 barrels per day in the first quarter of 2010. In the next quarter, we will be adding further production wells as we go through the quarter and subsequently through the year. Tucker generated positive cash flow and earnings over the quarter. Turning to our growth pillars, as Ashim mentioned, the Sunrise Energy Project continues to progress on schedule towards first production in 2012. 12 horizontal wells were spud and 7 were fully drilled in the quarter, and the well logs and cores we're getting back from that operation show that the reservoir quality is in line with our expectations. Several contracts were signed during the quarter for the key equipment, including contracts for steam generators, vessels, the water treatment plant, and the camp to support the project. During the quarter, we advanced conceptual work for Sunrise Phase 2. We do plan to commence pre-feed work on that project in the second half of 2011. We also drilled 24 stratigraphic test wells to further delineate our Selesky oil sands lease. In the Atlantic region, production continued to be strong from North Amethyst. The field produced an average of 31,000 barrels per day gross during the quarter, of which Husky share is 21,400 barrels. In 2011, we expect to tie in another production well and one more injector at North Amethyst. At West White Rose, our next satellite project, our pilot well pair progressed on schedule. These wells will help refine our understanding of the development potential of the full West White Rose field. First production from the pilot is expected in the third quarter of this year. In 2011, we also plan to drill an appraisal well at our Mizzen discovery and an exploration well to test another prospect south of Terra Nova. Looking over to Southeast Asia, as Ashim mentioned, we continue to make good progress on the Liwan gas project as well. We're aiming to sanction the project later in 2011, and we continue to target first production in late 2013. All 9 development wells for the Liwan 3-1 field have been drilled, confirming the quality and the extent of the reservoir. Tendering of key pieces of the project, including deep water production equipment, pipelines, and installation services, is advancing. In Indonesia, Husky and its partners continue to move forward with plans for the development of the Madura BD and MDA gas fields. Tenders for Madura's long lead items, including the floating production storage offloading vessel, are to be issued by mid-year. We continue to target first production from Madura in 2014. So in summary, in the upstream, we continue to make substantial progress on accelerating near-term production and advancing our growth pillars, and we remain comfortable with our production guidance for the remainder of the year. At this time, I'd like to turn you over to our moderator for your questions, and following that, Ashim will offer some closing remarks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Analysts who wish to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Please ensure you lift the handset if you are using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Your first question comes from George Toriola of UBS. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and good morning, guys. Just this question is for Aseem. The pillars of growth you suggested are delivering results. I wonder, and we know what the sort of medium to longer term growth pillars are. In the near term, could you provide some clarity on your thoughts here? Are you focused on execution? Are you looking at incremental acquisitions? What's the very near-term strategy?
Okay, good question. I mean, first of all, I do want to say that what I talked of was we were executing the interim steps of the pillars of growth. I'm not suggesting for a minute that the pillars of growth are giving us the results today, just so this small point of clarification there. Nonetheless, I think we are at this point focused on becoming an execution machine. Okay, very simple. We have a strategy. It's not our plan to change strategy every day. We did have a need to bridge a short-term gap, and we have executed some critical inorganic steps towards that, and we're done with it for the moment. At this point, we are focused on executing what we have, and I think you would have got a flavor from what Rob was talking about, both in terms of project execution for the larger projects and in terms of executing our present portfolio. That's what we're focusing on. We want to become a predictable execution machine. I mean, if something opportunistic, which is very value creative, should come our way, we would be open to that in terms of inorganic stuff, but always within the very tight strategic rigor we have laid out, which is, I believe I use the term strategic contiguity. That's something that speaks to our core skills, that keeps us in the geographies that we are in, and most importantly, is financially accretive. So I don't ever want to box myself into a corner of saying something's always done. But having said that, at this point, our focus is on becoming an execution machine.
Thanks a lot, Dutton.
Next question comes from Greg Pardy of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I've got some quick ones, and then I did want to ask you something on strategy, mostly on the downstream. But how should we be thinking about gas realizations then with Madura? I believe those are with power producers, but just wanted to get an understanding as to whether there'll be any linkage then with petroleum prices whatsoever.
Alistair, why did you take that?
Yeah, the gas offtake agreements for Madura be sold into Indonesia. So they're going to be kind of domestic pricing, which is clearly lower than what you might get in selling it to China. But there won't be much linkage with oil prices for those, Greg.
Okay, no problem. No, that's what we thought before. With Liwan, then, Alistair, I think at your strategy session, we've been talking about 150 million cubic feet a day of production to your interest. I just wanted to take a reality check on the CapEx and see if you can comment, but we're somewhere around $1.75 billion, $2 billion for that development net to your interest. Are those numbers about right?
That would be for, I'm trying to recall from the investor day, I think that was Liwan 3-1 we were talking about, specifically not the other two developments.
Okay.
The number for production for the full developments, once they ramp up in 2015, is 250 million a day.
Yeah, but that's larger capex also.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's associated with
the full capex.
Okay, so your interest then will ramp to 250?
Yeah, over time as we bring on the additional Lihua 2 field.
Okay. Okay, and then I think what you're saying is boost CapEx accordingly.
Yeah.
Okay. Your release has got a lot in here just in terms of a very extensive land position in Western Canada, and you've highlighted some of the areas, but would you plan or would you be open to sort of coming out, targeted production rates, what have you, with a number, whether it's the Viking, Cardium, what have you? Are you open to doing that? It just feels as though it's a lot going on, but it's just a question of bringing some focus in terms of what it's going to mean production-wise.
Rob, do you want to take that?
Well, maybe if you just give me a little more clarity on what the question is.
Well, I think, Rob, it's really a question of just what kind of production, you know, is there a way that you could break down what kind of production targets you have just for some of the new plays that you're bringing on?
Okay, well, we aren't ready to sit and do a breakdown, but what we did do at the at our presentation last year, if you remember, was our target production coming from these plays over the period to 2015 is to grow the business to about 30,000 barrels a day. And what we're seeing out there at the moment still leaves us very confident we'll be able to do that over the five-year period.
Okay, and what? And just as a point of reference, then where would those be at? Were they effectively zero at Christmas? Minimal.
They were about 5,000 barrels a day currently.
Okay. Thanks very much. And the last question is just really one on strategy. And obviously, we've seen a recovery here in terms of downstream. If we, for whatever reason, this cycle gets extended and downstream, you know, does start to attract more attention, strategically, is there any role, like, is Lima a necessary part of the portfolio longer term?
I think to be honest with you, our view on the refining assets is they are options, and we will reevaluate the value of the options as we as the situation unfolds. But basically, I want to be clear about this. Our strategy continues to remain integrated.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much.
As a reminder, analysts who wish to ask a question may press star and one on their touch-tone phone. The next question comes from Andrew Potter of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I guess just a few questions. First, maybe if you could just talk a little bit about Mizzen. What is a little bit more specifically about when we should expect this to spud and when we'd expect results? And maybe if you can talk a little bit about range of potential resource estimates. And second question was just on Tucker. Maybe if you could just elaborate on, with the new wells coming on, where would we expect to exit 2011, and maybe a little color even on where we'd expect this to go in 2012?
Okay, let me answer the Tucker question first, and I'll hand you over to Rob for Mizzen. On Tucker, this project starts to cover our cost of capital and give an accretive return at today's pricing at about the 10,000 to 12,000 barrels a day range. Okay, and our present projections lead us to believe that we could get to those sorts of figures by the end of this year. Since this project was conceived, oil prices are up, and I remind you that this project was conceived at a long-term oil price of 35 barrels. So the metrics that are required to make this project work have changed materially. On Mizzen, Rob, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, just briefly. I mean, we're planning with our partner Statoil to spud that well, subject to rig availability, sometime in the third quarter. In terms of what we have there, we have one exploration well. On the basis of the information we had there, we were awarded the largest significant discovery license ever given on the East Coast. But the key thing now is the delineation well to really understand the full scope and size of that development. So it'd be premature to speculate on the size yet.
Okay, that's fine. Thanks.
We will now open the question and answer session to members of the media. If you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. There are no further questions at this time.
Actually, we'll turn it over to Ashim for some closing comments.
Okay, well, thank you. So basically, I'd close by saying I think the picture that you see emerging, and I think that speaks to the point that George Torriola raised earlier in the meeting, was one of increasing momentum as we execute on our near-term strategy and fill in the building blocks of our growth pillars. So to refresh your memory, it's the Lima and gas project, which we expect to sanction in 2011, and that comes on stream in the end of 2013, and the Sunrise Energy Project, which is progressing well, that comes on stream in 2014. In the months ahead, we hope to be able to share some news on our third growth pillar of the Atlantic region, where we are evaluating plans to optimize our White Rose project. But in the meantime, we are focused on executing the existing parts of our portfolio. Thank you for joining us. A good start to the new year, and all the best to everybody. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your telephones. Thank you for joining, and have a pleasant day.